Welcome to The Unconventional Path, Entrepreneurship and Innovation Stories and Ideas. Hi, I'm Mike Wasserman.
And I'm Bela Musitz.
So if you've been listening to the podcast, you know that Mike and I like to try new things. And well, this one is way out there. It's actually about the experience of losing my 95-year-old mother and how it completely changed my view of death and dying. I went from fearing it and trying to ignore it to embracing the experience.
And Bela, this is the beauty of podcasting. If this isn't of interest to you, it's fine to skip it, right? And go on with the rest of your day. But as part of you and I talking about this, you know, I thought this is a really cool idea to just do an episode on this and kind of what you've went through, that it might be really helpful for some of our listeners. One of the things about getting older is that you gain more experience at dealing with people you love dying. And I guess I've lost my father and my father-in-law in the past few years. So although I never like to say I know what you're feeling, Bela, as you go through the loss, because I don't know what you're feeling. But I do know it can be difficult, very difficult for many people. My perception is that everyone deals with death and dying differently. And second, it's not easy to lose someone you love, even when they've been very sick or they've been in pain or they're very old. It's still a hard process. I've seen those things happen, and I know that it's still not easy. And I know that every situation is different. And then third, I think not only is it hard to lose somebody that you love, but a lot of people struggle with how to support somebody close to them who loses somebody. And I think that's really important, is even if it's not me, if I'm young and I haven't lost anybody, I'm going to know people that have lost people. And that's why I think having this conversation might be helpful to everybody. So in my case, I think one of the ways I can support you as you go through this process is ask you if you want to talk about losing your mom. So Bela, I'll start this way. Hey, I'm sorry to hear that you lost your mom. Do you want to talk a bit about your mom and how you're feeling?
Yeah, and I think I agree with you, Mike. It is very helpful. I have found it to be very comforting to find an individual or two that I can share this experience with. And, you know, that's, as they say, I guess that's part of the process. And it's been great having you, listening as I've worked through this. So a little bit of background, and I think this is a good place to start, right? So a little bit of background about my family and growing up and stuff. So, you know, growing up, my family unit was my dad, my mom, my sister, and me. That was it. All of our relatives were back in Hungary, and I never saw them. I really didn't have a relationship with them because we immigrated to this country when I was just over 3 years old. So I really don't have any memories of any of my relatives. And, they were still behind the Iron Curtain. We sort of escaped from a country behind the Iron Curtain. So there was no going back to visit. And so whenever someone did pass away, it was fundamentally a phone call or a letter that we received that, you know, my father's brother passed away, or my grandparents passed away, or one of them passed away, right? So there really wasn't much else. And that was sort of my experience in death of relatives or people that, you know, certainly I could see how it impacted my mom and dad, because they knew those folks for a long time and they were close to them. And then I think it was about 12 years ago, my father passed away. It was kind of suddenly, and I got a phone call from my mom. I lived in upstate New York at that time. My parents lived down in North Carolina. And she said, you know, dad passed away. And, you know, so that was my whole sort of context of people passing was receiving a phone call. And even though I was very close to my parents, we had lived in different states for 25 years almost. So we didn't see each other a lot, two or three times a year. They were not built in to my daily life and my daily life patterns. So I think, you know, that was sort of interesting. And 5 years ago, when my mom was 90, the house became too much for her. So she sold her house in North Carolina. And she moved up north here, up to New York State, where I live. And we got her an apartment up here, very close to me, 5-minute drive away. And she wanted to be closer to family, especially the grandkids. and the great-grandchildren, right? So at this point in time, she had grandkids and great-grandchildren. And since she was so close, I would see her like several times a week. And I would say that in the last 5 years, I saw my mom 3 or 4 times every week, talked to her every night on the phone, and we became much closer than we were the previous 25 years, where we, you know, saw each other just a few times a year. And she didn't drive when she moved up here. So, you know, my wife Elaine would take her shopping, or I'd take her shopping. And, you know, she became an integral part of our family, which is interesting, right? Because your parent wasn't for a while, right? Because you sort of move away, and that's just how life is. It's not like many, many families were, you know, 100 years ago, where everyone lived in the same house. And so she became an integral part of the family. And her eyesight started failing, so she had macular degeneration, she became blind. And, you know, and I got along with her great. Elaine got along with her great. So it was a nice, close relationship. We became very close in the last 5 years. So that was that in itself was a wonderful experience. And I'm really grateful that we had that opportunity to sort of rebond and reconnect, that we sort of had lost because of the distance, the geographic distance between our lives.
Interesting, Bela. Interesting history. Thanks for sharing it. But, you know, I think it's really cool to learn some of these stories about your mom, because I didn't know a lot of these things. I mean, you would talk about her, but this is kind of cool. One question I have for you is, how was the transition from her from living in this apartment close to you? And I know that she went into assisted living, and I know that can be a really hard transition for some families. How did that work for you?
Yeah, that was a hard transition, because she was fiercely independent. You know, she lived alone in her house for 7 or 8 years before she got the apartment. And it was something that also happened suddenly, because she sort of fell in the apartment, and it became obvious, it became very clear that living alone did not work. It was not a safe environment for her. It took some coaxing, but I think deep down my mom understood that this was fine. And we found her a place also really close home, really close to my house, you know, 5 minutes away. And it was sort of like being in a college dormitory, if you ask me. That's what it reminded me of, right? Everyone had a private room. Everyone went to eat at the, didn't call it the cafeteria, but, you know, the dining room. And you got 3 meals a day. You still had your private room. You had neighbors, and you could chit-chat with them if you wanted. They had lots of social activities. They had all, you know, whether it be, you know, bingo or, you know, storytelling time or crafts. They had lots of stuff to do. And, you know, so it was pretty nice. And I think the first month there for her was challenging. She accepted it. And it was probably 2 or 3 months after she had been there, then she started calling it home. She accepted it and said, you know what, this is working out well. And it did work out well. You know, during the time she was there, you could see that her activity level and her energy level were slowly decreasing. And that, you know, nothing, no sudden changes in anything, but she'd have a little setback. She'd get a cold or something. And then once she'd recover from something, she'd never quite got back to her previous sort of level. And there were some great days and there were some not so great days. And, you know, it got to the point where it seemed like every year we would make a couple of trips to the emergency room because she'd fall ill. Would become very weak, and they'd send her, you know, I'd get the phone call, hey, your mom's on the way to the emergency room. I'd go, she'd spend, you know, maybe a day, maybe 3 days in the hospital, and then she'd return, and she'd be a little less mobile than she was before she went into the hospital, right? So you get each one of these little step function. Every time she'd make a trip to the emergency room, when she'd come back, she went down a little bit. So it was a clear trend. very clear trend. And that's, you know, that's just the way it is. I talked to her every night on the phone. I'd see her two or three times a week. And she still remained a very integrated part of our family. She'd see the great grandkids. She'd be at the house for holidays, et cetera. So it was all wonderful.
Yeah, but this going downhill, I know, is also hard, right? That you see people starting to fail and eventually get to the point where you know, the end is coming soon. It's an interesting, again, another transition point. I think that's hard for people to kind of think about this, that the end is coming. And you kind of change roles, right? As, you know, you were the child and your mom was the parent, but now at this stage, you really act more like the parent, right? And helping, yeah. And helping your mom. What was your experience in this phase as kind of the roles flipped?
Yeah. You know, it's another good question, Mike, because quite honestly, in the beginning, and this probably doesn't sound nice to say, but you know, hey, I'm an open book about this stuff. It almost felt like a burden. It was like, oh, what a pain in the butt, right? I gotta go do this. And then there was some point in time, and I don't know what happened or why it happened, but then it became something I wanted to do. It switched, right? It went from sort of being a burden, being a duty or an obligation is not the right word. I didn't feel like obligated, like I had to do it. I felt like I wanted to do it, right? I wanted to help my mom. I wanted to be there while she was, you know, she'd be, someday she wouldn't get out of bed. She would just, you know, just barely get out of bed. They'd bring her meals to her. And other days she'd be up out of bed and she'd be walking around the building. So there were these real periods of swings up and down. And while we were progressing through that, you know, she became much more dependent upon us. And then the whole COVID thing hit, which was, you know, another thing that just, for a period of time, I couldn't see my mom, right? The assisted living place was locked down. And we could go chat with her through the window of her room, which made it really challenging. And I also remember that was a really strange thing for my mom to try to understand. She had trouble coping with, wait a minute, what the hell's going on, right? And I tell her, well, the great-grandkids can't come see you because they're too young and they won't let them in. And, you know, we talked to mom through the window of her room. And it was just sort of the whole COVID thing added this strange twist to everything. But I will tell you, during that last year, going back to sort of what I talked about early in this podcast, I expected to get the phone call from the assisted living place that, you know, last night your mom passed away. And that was sort of my expectation. And in many ways, in my mind, that's how I wanted it to happen. I sort of like, I did not want to be there. I didn't want to get the phone call that said, hey, you know what? Your mom's going to pass away soon. You know, why don't you come over? I just, for whatever reasons, again, I can't explain these emotional things. I did not want to be there to see my mom pass away. So I was sort of okay with this notion of I'll just get a phone call. And I clearly, every time I left her or every time I talked to her on the phone, every time I left when I was visiting her, in my own mind, I said my goodbyes. Right. It was in my mind, I clearly understood that may be the last time that I see her. Yeah. So that's sort of where I was sort of in that last year where I knew things were getting close and that any day I could get a phone call.
Interesting. And I assume that she knew that the end was near too. Right. At some point, how did she feel about the end of her life? Did you talk about it with her, what she wanted and how she felt?
Yes. Yeah. We were very open about that. She had this great saying. She would say, actually for the last couple of years, you know, she would say, you know, I feel like that any moment in time, 49% of my body wants to die and 51% of it wants to live. And then the next day, it'll just be the opposite. It'll be 49% wants to live and 51% wants to die. And these two sides are constantly fighting each other. But we talked about what she wanted, what her wishes were. You know, she said she was very clear. She does not want any surgery. She does not want to be sustained. She does not want any of those things. And she would often say, you know, I just hope I go to sleep one night and I don't wake up. You know, that's kind of what she wanted. And so we had talked about that. We talked about what she wanted for, you know, any types of services, all that kind of stuff. And her and I were open with each other about that. She was consistent about it. So we had all the legal stuff in place. So I was her healthcare proxy. She had a living will. You know, she had do not resuscitate, do not intubate orders in place, all those types of things, so that when something does happen, people don't do things that you don't want them to do. So that was actually, it was okay to talk about that. And it wasn't emotional. My mom was clear about it, which made it good. She wasn't like, oh, you decide what to do, right? She didn't put that burden on me. She said, here's what I want. And I found that to be very, very helpful. And it's something I hope I remember when I get to that point, that I say that to my kids, to say, hey, here's what I want. And I just want to be clear about it. You know?
So Bela, you need to have that conversation now with them, because you never know when you're lucky. Your mom's mental faculties were clear, right? She was clear at the end, but not everybody is so fortunate, or she could speak. Not everybody is so fortunate. So that's probably a good takeaway from this. It's not tomorrow or next week, but you should probably think about really clarifying that if you haven't already with your family, to take what you learned from what you just told me, right, about your relationship with your mom, and making sure that gift, you give that gift to your kids and your wife, right? Because she really gave you a gift there.
That's right.
Of not making it your burden, right? That's one of the most amazing gifts I think a parent can give a child.
Yeah? Yep. Yeah, I mean, Elaine and I actually do have living wills, you know, but I think, you know, what happens with a living will is it's filed away in a box and people kind of forget what it is. So having those conversations on a regular basis, I'm not sure what regular means, is important. So people understand that that's sort of still what you want. And you can modify.
Even if they're uncomfortable.
Even if they're uncomfortable. That's right. That's right. And I've had those conversations, and you know, my one son's an emergency room doctor. So is his wife. So they understand these things, and they also understand that they have seen many times when it goes bad, when there's no communication about what's going on, and one part of the family wants one thing and another part of the family wants another thing. And he goes, it's just a disaster.
Yep.
Right. It's an emotional disaster for everyone. Whereas my mom was very clear about this, everyone supported what she wanted, and it made all of that sort of easy. If, you know, I'm not sure that's an appropriate word, but it made it clear. It made it clear that that's what we were going to do.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's an interesting takeaway from this conversation, Bela, is that, you know, for listeners too, and for us, is to make that. You know, I don't like New Year's resolutions. A friend of a friend taught me it's much better to have New Year's intentions, right? So you don't let yourself down. But yeah, as to sometime this year, kind of have those conversations and talk to, if you haven't already set up like what you said, is to talk to a lawyer or every doctor's office or every hospital as social workers. I have a good friend, Amy, and she's a social worker at a hospital in Michigan. And that's her job, is to help families navigate this. And it's probably good to set those things up and start to have those conversations, even if you're young and healthy. My experience with my parents is you just don't know when they're going to kind of lose their cognitive ability or lose their ability to communicate. I've had both happen. So yeah, that's kind of a cool takeaway. But let's go back to your mom's story. Tell me about the last few days of her life. I mean, I think that's kind of where we're at this point. You knew the end was coming. You'd had these conversations. What happened?
Yeah. So on a Saturday morning, 7:30-ish, the phone rang. The phone normally doesn't ring on a Saturday or any morning at 7:30, right? So I knew it was something. And it was the assisted living place. And they said that, you know, this morning when I checked on my mom, she had signs and symptoms of a stroke. She had slurred speech, face was drooping on one side. So those are kind of clear signs of a stroke. So she was on her way to the hospital. So I went to the emergency room to meet her there. And you know, this is also COVID still going on, so you can't go see people in the emergency room. But they're also very compassionate people who work in hospitals. And, you know, so I called up and I said, look, English is a second language for my mom. She's legally blind. I'm her healthcare proxy. And they said, yes, no problem. You can come in. So, you know, just because they have a rule at a hospital, and I found here again, being pleasant about it to the person you're talking to, not demanding anything, sort of asking permission, worked very well in this situation. So I was there in the emergency room, saw her, you know, her speech was clearly slurred. It's hard to understand her. They ran some tests, did the CT scans, MRIs, all that kind of stuff. And they clearly showed she had a minor stroke. And it looked like the biggest impact was with her speech and her ability to swallow. So those were kind of the two big deficits that were sort of there. It didn't look like there was anything else, but, you know, you never know for sure. But that was the sort of the two big deficits. So they admitted her to the hospital. And after about a day, it became pretty clear she was not going to leave the hospital. Or if she was going to leave the hospital, she'd be going to a nursing home. So they actually moved her to a wing of the hospital where they deal with very, very sick individuals. So not intensive care, but sort of people who are, you know, in the last period of their life. And the nurses and the doctors there, and the technicians, everybody sort of specialize in this stuff. And here again, in the hospital, you know, I'd go visit her. I'd spend a fair amount of time with her. In my own mind, early on in this process, I was still thinking about this notion of, you know, I just get a phone call in the morning or in the afternoon when I'm not there. Say, hey, your mom passed away. And I didn't want to be there. And again, every time I left the hospital, I sort of said my goodbyes. And I realized that might be the last time I see her. So that's sort of, you know, that first few days, that's what that was like.
Interesting. And I know this feeling of just not wanting to be there, just wanting it to be quick and quiet and all right, a phone call is fine, but it doesn't always work that way, right? What happened next?
Yeah. You know, I even considered saying something to the nurses there that, you know, if you know that it's getting close, don't call me. You know, I don't want to be here. I mean, it was like, I mean, I didn't say anything, but I came really close. Actually, I talked to Andy, my son, about that my emergency room doctor's son about it. And he said, don't say anything, Dad. It'll work out. You know, and I think he's seen enough of this to know he was very helpful in sort of helping guide me through this as well, which was interesting.
Again,
right?
the kid becomes the parent in some
yes.
ways, right?
Exactly, right? And so that was very helpful. And I, you know, he really had he shared a couple of insights along this process, and they were actually here while my mom was in the hospital. They happened to be visiting at the time. And so he got to see her as well, which was fortunate. But anyway, I thought about saying something to the nurses. Hey, don't call me. Just call me that she's passed. But I didn't. And I'll tell you, the doctors and nurses on this wing of the hospital were super, right? Not only did they know how to make a patient comfortable, which is sort of she's in comfort care, right? They know she's going to pass away. My mom didn't want a feeding tube. She didn't want anything to sustain life. So we didn't do any of those things. So then, you know, okay, it's, you know, this many days, this is how the body works. It's like, if you don't have water, you last 3 or 4 days at the most, right? If you don't have food, but you can get water, then you'll last, you know, 3 or 4 weeks. That's just sort of how it works. But not only did the nurses and doctors on this wing know how to make my mom comfortable and do all the things that she needed, but they also really were very, very helpful in helping the family deal with this, right? And me deal with it. They sort of guided me through this process in a very compassionate way. And it was just remarkable to me. You could tell that these people were here not only because they were very knowledgeable about what was going to happen and how it was going to happen for the most part, but also because they were compassionate people, right? If you think about it, people who work on this wing, right, they have a special gift too, because they're dealing with this on a daily basis. Yeah.
Yeah, the whole hospice process and comfort care, I mean, these, you know, in this times especially, it's important to appreciate, I think, the people who are working hard in the healthcare system and overworked and overburdened. But yeah, these people that help with end of life are just amazing. It really is something special and rare and should be valued and appreciated. So how did you spend your time with her during the last few days?
Yeah, you know, so I spent a lot of time in the hospital. My sister was here also. She was able to come up for several days. Like I said, her grandson, my son, was here. My other son lives here. So everybody got to say their goodbyes, which was, that was really good. That's the other good thing about not getting the phone call in the middle of the night that something, that she passed away, right? So we did have this sort of a week where we knew it was coming and people got to come in and deal with it and process it the way that they wanted to. So I spent a lot of time in a hospital with her. And you know, she couldn't speak. Her ability to speak decreased each day. So the last three or four days, she couldn't speak at all. She could nod her head. She clearly could hear, right? So when I walked into a room and I said hello to her, you know, she would reach her arm out. So she, her hand out. So she clearly could hear. And, you know, I sat there and talked to her. And I talked to her about the happy times we had as a family. Talked to her about growing up, you know, what a great mom she was. And she would acknowledge those things, you know, either by nodding her head or by, you know, squeezing my hand tight or something. So she clearly was there and could hear and understand. And then I think it was about the fourth day. Here again, I don't know what happened, but I can't explain it. But I did a complete 180 about not wanting to be there. I totally switched. It's like I went from, just call me up and tell me she's passed, to I want to be here for her. I want to be here and experience this with her when she passes. And I don't know what the hell happened in my head, but something flipped. And, you know, it was on the seventh day in the hospital. It was early in the evening. Everyone else had gone. I was the only one there. It was just my mom and I. And you could tell things were changing. Right, her breathing patterns were changing. There's other things going on, and you could tell that something was going to happen. And you know, I was there holding her hand when she passed, and it was. I thought, I didn't know what to expect, but it really was pretty good.
What were your emotions kind of in that moment? What was going through your mind?
Yeah, it was, you know, it was calm. And it was loving. It was peaceful. It really was a very, very fulfilling spiritual experience. It was just, I don't know. For me, it worked out really great. You know, and I think about it, you know, it was sort of like the full circle of life, right? We were together. My mom and I were together when I came into this world, right? And we were together when she departed the world. And that sort of is the full circle. And it was just the opposite of what I had conjured up and feared in my mind. I was really scared of this moment. And I welcomed it with open arms. And it was just, I'm so glad I did it. And again, I don't know what force came over me. I don't know what changed my mind, but something did. And you know, this for me, it was great. As great as something like this can be, again, it was very, just a great spiritual experience. I was so happy I was able to be there for that. Hopefully it brought some comfort to my mom. And, you know, this experience may or may not be for you. I'm not trying to say this is what everyone should do. I'm just sharing sort of this winding, twisting road that I went down, for me. And so I hope that, you know, you will, if something like this happens to you, you'll be open to something like this, right? I could envision how I could have just ran away from this and not been open to it. But for whatever reason, I was open to it and I was able to embrace it, and it turned out really well. Yeah.
Bela, thanks for sharing this. I mean, I know this isn't easy to talk about this and kind of with a whole bunch of people essentially sitting in your living room and listening to the story along with me, right? But I think there's some really big takeaways. I totally agree with you. Everybody's going to handle this differently. Everybody has different and sometimes very complicated relationships with their parents and other family members. So everybody's experience is going to be different. But I think there's some consistent takeaways here with how we deal with loss, especially of a parent. And one thing is actually to give some forethought, as we said, to how you want to deal with your family and friends in terms of how the end comes from them and how we deal with our own mortality in terms of what we want to start thinking about as we get closer. Sometimes you have no knowledge and it's fast, but sometimes you do have some ability to develop some insights. And I think that, you said at some point that, you said your goodbye every time you talk to somebody and kind of having that approach of not leaving anything unsaid. I know that happened to me in my experiences, that it was really important to feel like you said what you needed to say, good, bad, or indifferent. And that's kind of a nice mentality to maybe take away from your story, is that you never know when the end is going to happen. And it's really important to make sure that every time you say goodbye to somebody on the phone or when you visit, you do it with that intentionality, that it could be the last time you see them, young or old, right? But kind of living your life that way, I think, has some benefits. I think the second point, after kind of not leaving things unsaid, is this idea of clear instructions about last wishes, about medical care, about a service, about things like that. And I really think that that's something that no matter how you feel about your relatives or how you feel about yourself or how you feel about death, that it's really important to put some thinking into that before you get sick, before you something happens. So that's in place. And like you said, kind of revisiting that on some sort of regular basis to make sure that the people around you know what you want. As hard as those conversations are, it's a lot harder to not know, so that really is a gift that your mom gave you. And I hope that that's something that people can take away from this. And then I think the last thing is, you're right, is keep an open mind, that your preconceived ideas about death and dying again, can change. And as long as you're open to that change and being honest with yourself and with the people around you is great. And it's great to ask for help. It's great you asked your son. It's great that you talked with the doctors and the nurses. I think dealing with things alone is probably the worst thing that you can do in a situation like this, that reaching out to your support network, to your family, to your friends, to the people at the hospital, to your family doctor, whoever, there's lots of resources out there. And I think it's important that people know that and kind of have that in the back of their mind. So those are kind of the three takeaways from hearing your story that I think are important for everybody, even though, like you said, everybody's situation is different. But these things, thinking about these things and talking about these things, can be a real challenge for people. And I think just to hear you, that you went through it, maybe you'll give some people some comfort and some support moving forward.
Yeah, I agree, Mike. And I'm so glad my mom and I talked about this because it gave me, gave me the strength, knowing that I knew what she wanted and she was clear about it, and so that I could support her in ways that were aligned with her wishes.
Yeah, I think that's so important, Bela. And I hope your kids are, I'm sure your kids will be as great with you when you reach the end of your life as you were with your mom. That's my greatest hope for you, because what a great son that you've been, I think, to your mom, and I'm sure your kids will support you in the same way. But on that note, I think it's probably a good time to wrap this conversation up. It's been about 35 minutes, and that's usually our normal length with these things. And even though the topic was very different today than what we talk about normally, I think it's probably, we'll keep to our usual time limits. So listeners, we hope you found our conversation interesting and thought-provoking, even though it was not what we typically talk about. But if you have questions or comments about what we've discussed, you're always free to get in touch with us. Our email is bela.ann.mike@gmail.com.
Yeah, and thanks for listening, Mike. This has been very helpful to me and the other conversations we've had through this process. You've been a great friend, and it's been very good. And hopefully, this is helpful to one or two people out there in the listening audience. So for today, signing off from upstate New York. See you all next time.
Yeah, and thanks again, Bela, for sharing. I appreciate it, and I hope that you can remember your mom in some great ways and share those memories with your grandchildren in the coming years. So thanks, Bela. All right, everybody, see you next time for our next episode.